Bande Hong.
The following is a class on Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 5, Text 14, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on September 11, 1998, in Zurich.
The embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act. Nor does he create the fruits of action. All of this is enacted by the modes of material nature, performed by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The living entity, as will be explained in the seventh chapter, is one of the energies or natures of the Supreme Lord, but is distinct from matter, which is another nature called inferior of the Lord. Somehow the superior nature of the living entity has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. This temporary body or material dwelling place which he obtains is the cause of varieties of activities and the resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. We are reading this evening from Bhagavad Gita chapter 5, text 14, which is describing the condition of the eternal soul when it is entrapped within the illusion of the misconception that it is this material body. First of all, I would like to express my great gratitude for the opportunity to be with all of you here this evening at the ISKCON Hare Krishna Temple, Zurich, Switzerland. I've heard for many years about the wonderful devotees residing in this temple. Practically anyone who I have met over the years who has come here has, with such an inspired heart, talked about how kind and how Vaishnav equality the devotees are here. And this is my first time. I'm very, very happy to be with you. And it's kind of like coming home because this Vyasa Sara was made in Vrindavan. Exactly the same Vyasa Sara that Srila Prabhupada is sitting in Prabhupada's palace of gold, the Pushpa Samadhi in Vrindavan. So in this particular verse, Krishna is explaining to us the predicament that we are all in due to ignorance. Srila Prabhupada describes the cause of all suffering is ignorance. ignorance in the sense that we are forgetful of what is reality. Maya is sometimes defined as that which is not. Actually, this body exists and the soul exists, but when the soul thinks that it is the body, that is not what it is. So that is an illusion. And this illusion is the cause of all distress and bondage. And Srila Prabhupada so nicely explains the only possible solution from the miseries of this material existence is to dispel this illusion. Unfortunately, in the world today, we are trying to make so many arrangements to solve the problems of the sufferings of this world. But Sri Prahlad Maharaj explains that the solution becomes a greater cause of problem than the problem itself. Just like when a spider makes his web, he designs it so expertly. When the fly comes into the web, at first he's just a little bit entangled. But the more the fly works and strives by his own physical prowess and intelligence, the more he becomes entangled in the web. And the more enthusiastic he is to get out, the more he becomes completely entrapped. So Krishna has given us so many illustrations to show us exactly the situation that he has put us in. In the sense that we have chosen to come here, but then we are under the control of material nature, which has been designed by him. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, recently we were reading Lord Brahma, who was actually the creator of the universe. He was born from the navel of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu specifically revealed to him from within his heart the purpose of the material creation and how to actually live within material creation so that you can fulfill its real purpose. And then he taught Brahma how to create all the phenomena within this particular universe. So Lord Brahma is the original spiritual master within the universe. And when he speaks, it is not just an opinion. If someone makes someone, they know how it is made, what it is made for, and how it works. So Brahma explains that actually he doesn't like to create this universe because he knows it's only created to make people suffer. And he's a great compassionate soul. He does not want to make people suffer. But he does give transcendental knowledge through parampara by which people can get out of this suffering. And Brahma explains that the material nature is designed in such a way that any effort we make for happiness will ultimately give us exactly the opposite result that we want from it. This is the law of nature. It is not someone's opinion. Law is the law. We can make so many philosophies, and we can make so many popular ideas and write so many books about how this is a world and let us enjoy. But the Creator himself explains the laws in which it was created, that any endeavor we make for happiness in this world will ultimately bring us exactly the opposite result that we want from it. Now, this may sound pessimistic, but it's the reality. But there is optimism. The greatest pessimism is if you're willing to accept a pessimistic situation as the all in life. Then Lord Brahma explains why there is pleasure in this world. Who would like to give their opinion of why there is pleasure in this world? Or would you rather hear Brahma's opinion? Brahma's opinion is he has created the objects of the senses, and he has created the bodies that enjoy the objects of the senses. For one reason, because the world is a place of suffering, but anyone can get out of the world if they really want to. Therefore, the pleasures of the world are to keep people in the world, so they go on suffering. The pleasures are meant to make you suffer. It's like a prison. A prison has bars, so you can't get out. There's no bars in this world. Durga means like a prison house. What is it that keeps us in this world? What keeps us in this world is that we don't want to get out of this world. That we still want to try to find some enjoyment. And there's enough enjoyment somehow or other that we are experiencing in which we think, there is happiness. I've had it. Now I'm suffering, but I know there's happiness. So let me try for more. Let me try again and again and again and again and again. Krishna explains also in Gita, Yehi sam spashita bhoga dukha jonayevate, that the pleasures of this world are the sources of misery. It is explained in Bhagavad Gita, when we find some pleasure, we become attached to that pleasure. And then, to the degree we're attached to something, to that degree we have to suffer when we lose it. And dukkhalayam ashashvatam, everything must be lost in this world. Everything will be taken away. So the Vedic literatures explain that there are different paths by which we can elevate our consciousness. There is the karmakanda path. You want to enjoy according to the regulative principles of religion. Don't just enjoy according to your own independent will and indulge in sinful activities, because that sort of enjoyment creates terrible, terrible reactions. But if we come more to the mode of goodness and we try to enjoy under regulative principles with the consciousness that there is a supreme God or gods who are giving us the benefits of our desires, then we gradually become more pious. But Srila Prabhupada explains that the difference between piety and impiety is like the difference between wet stool and dry stool. They both happen to be stool. Hare Krishna. Now for a human being, stool is stool. But for a hog, there's a big difference between wet and dry. For a hog, wet stool is very juicy and succulent. Very delicious, full of ras. Dry stool is terribly dry and tasteless, and painful to try to eat. So for a hog, he's always thinking, this is wet, this is dry, this is wet, this is dry, this is happiness, this is distress, this is piety, this is impiety. But for a human being, he just sees it's all stool. So Prabhupada explains that for one who actually is on the transcendental path, he says, piety, impiety, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, pleasure, pain, they are all material. They do nothing for the soul. They can give no pleasure to the soul whatsoever. and they've entangled the soul in its misconception that it is this body. So we may not be able to give up these things. In fact, it is impossible, because the soul is anandamaya vyashat. It is by nature pleasure-seeking. The soul is part and parcel of Krishna. It is satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So the soul wants to find bliss. It cannot live without bliss. But after being frustrated through trying to enjoy through the material senses, even to the extent of being elevated to the higher planets, where the enjoyments are millions and millions of times greater than here, still it is temporary. We have to lose it all. It is just a matter of inevitable time. Then one may take to the Jnana Marg, where everything in this world is temporary, and I'm looking for something eternal. So we try to achieve liberation from all material desires, from all material attachments, and enter into an impersonal state of non-existence. The great acharyas teach us that if you are eating bad food and you have terrible stomach disorder, then you may think that happiness means not to eat at all. Certainly it's better than eating bad things and having stomach disorder. But that is not the perfection of life. The perfection of life is not to stop eating, it's to eat the right things that actually give real nourishment. So the Bhakti Marg is teaching us Paramdrisvanivartate, how to experience the real taste of happiness that the soul is longing for. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. He is all attractive. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadya Kabunoi Shavanari Sudhijinti Kodiyayudoi. Love of Krishna is dormant within everyone's heart. And Lord Chaitanya says, Anandam Bhudivardhanam Pratibhatam Punam Ratashvadhanam. How do we experience that love for by engaging our mind and senses in the service of Krishna, rather than in the service of Maya. And of course, in this age, the best way to connect our consciousness with Krishna, or remember Krishna, is through the chanting of His holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Maya is so strong. She is always trying to entrap us in this egoistic misconception that I am this body, I am this mind, I am this intelligence, and I am the doer of my activities. And we become very proud. Success is very dangerous in this world. Failure is dangerous too. Everything's dangerous in this world. But we think that we are the doer of our activities. But this is a false ego. Prakrite kriyamana niguna karmani sarvasha. It is explained in this particular verse that all this is enacted by the modes of nature. And Krishna explains that bewildered by the three modes of material nature, one thinks himself or herself to be the doer of their activities. But actually it is being carried out by nature. There are three modes of nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. They influence you. They impel you to act in a certain way. And then we want to take the credit. Krishna has given us the hands that we work with. He's given us the intelligence, He's given us our mind, He's given us our brain, He's given us our eyes, our ears, He's given us the air to breathe, He's given us all the facilities that we utilize. And yet we want credit. See what I have done. But reality is to understand that we're all just instruments in Krishna's hands. We have two choices. Whether we want to be instruments in Krishna's hands by serving the spiritual master and doing Krishna's will in this world, or whether we want to be instruments of Krishna through material nature. Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachana. Krishna's controlling material nature. So the materialistic people, they are simply acting under the influence of material nature. And they think themselves the doers. But actually, Krishna explains, he is the proprietor and doer of everything. People, they build something very wonderful. I have done something very great. Let the world come and see. But if it is yours, no one has the power to take it away. But through the force of time, Krishna takes everything away. Inevitably. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught the first and most important principle of a Vaishnava is humility. And what does humility mean? That I'm powerless, I'm helpless without the mercy of Krishna. And I recognize that at every moment in my life. As soon as we think we're the doers, as soon as we want other people to think that we're the doers, we become entangled in the network of ego, which is the source, actually, of all pain and misery, which is due to bondage. So what is real humility? That I'm just a helpless servant. And I have my free will. And if I use my free will properly, Krishna can do wonderful things through me. And if I misuse my free will, then material nature, through the three modes of material nature, will just do so many things through me that will complicate my life terribly. Srila Prabhupada explains Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, and it's very complex for those who are complicated. It's very simple to understand reality. That Krishna is the supreme controller of all controllers. Sarveshwareshwara, Bhakti Vinod Thakur has sounded to me, Sarveshwareshwara. You are this controller of all controllers. Everyone is an Ishwara. The little ant has control over some little sphere within his existence. And the poor man has some little control over whatever little facilities he has. And the king has so much control over the entire kingdom. And the demigods have greater control than that. But Krishna is Ishwara Parama. He is the supreme controller of all controllers. Everything is ultimately being controlled by him, either through his spiritual energy or his material energy. So simplicity and humility is Krishna. It is all yours. It is all yours. And therefore everything should be for you. If you take water from the Ganges to offer it to the Ganges is very pleased if it's offered with humility and devotion. But if a proud person says, "Oh, Mother Ganga, by my great compassion, I am going to give you some water." Ganga thinks, "Who is this nonsense? He's giving me water. He's taking it from me, giving it back to me, and thinking he's giving. I need his water." But if a humble devotee says, "Oh, Ganga Mataji, this is your water. But you are so merciful that I can become purified if I just make an attempt to offer it to you." And God, "Oh, such a nice devotee." So in the same way, whatever we have, whatever we can do, a devotee's not proud. A devotee's very simple. That it's coming from Krishna. It's being done by the mercy of Krishna. So let me offer it to Krishna. with this simple sense of devotion. And Bhagavatam says if Krishna is pleased, every part of Krishna becomes pleased. If you water the root of the tree, all parts of the tree are nourished. If we satisfy the Lord within our heart by our humble attempts to glorify Him through whatever we do, then we become truly satisfied in our life. Actually, bhakti means service in a spirit of glorification. We want to glorify Krishna. And how do we glorify Krishna? By giving Him the credit of everything that we do. As soon as we want to take credit, we become entangled. Therefore, Queen Kunti prayed, Akinchinagosharam, Janmaishwarya Sruta Srivira Edamana Madhapuman. That people who are proud of their beauty or wealth or knowledge or strength or high birth, they become bewildered by that pride. They cannot call out the name of Krishna with humble, helpless state of mind. But Krishna is the friend and the deliverer of those who are akinchana. Akinchana means in poverty. Does that mean we have to give away everything we have and live on the streets in order to get the mercy of Krishna? What is the actual meaning of poverty? Real poverty means not that you don't have anything, but that you understand that nothing is mine. Everything is Krishna's. Maharaj Yudhisthira, when he was living in the forest, he understood everything is Krishna's. But then when he was coronated as king of the entire planet Earth, he was equally poverty-stricken. In the sense that he recognized that my palace, my power, my throne, everything belongs to Krishna. My family, all my abilities and intelligence, it's all Krishna's. It's a gift of Krishna. And the perfection is to reciprocate with Krishna by offering these gifts back to Him in love. And to misuse them for any other purpose only creates entanglement and perpetuation of illusion. So real poverty is a state of consciousness. You can be a very wealthy person with a wonderful family, but my wife, she's not my wife. She's the property of God. She's a Vaishnavi. If I misuse her, it's an aparad. I must respect. And my husband, he's not just my husband. He's Krishna's representative. There should be respect. And these children, they are Krishna's children. If I do not care properly for Krishna's children, what an offense that is to Krishna. I must give them the love, the happiness, the compassion, and the care that a child of Krishna deserves. This is how I please Krishna. But not in an egoistic conception, but in a mood of service to Krishna. We serve Krishna through His various manifestations within this world and various relationships. So that type of simple, humble spirit will always bring us closer and closer to the Supreme Personality of God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught through his devotees these principles. In the most magnanimous style, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally appeared in this world in the mood of a devotee to teach us how to live our life and achieve the perfection of life. But he also taught through the example of his devotees, because the Lord loves to see his devotees glorified. So this principle of simplicity and how the Lord loves simplicity. Let us use two examples which seem to be very much opposite, but the principle is identical. First of all, one of Lord Chaitanya's associates was a very, very simple brahmachari named Suklambar. He was so poor. He just lived in a little thatched hut on the bank of the Ganga. He had no possessions whatsoever. All he had was a little cloth bag that he would wear around his shoulder. And he would go out to beg every day to at least 10 houses. Now, what do people give beggars? Usually they don't give them anything. They just give them a hard time. Get out, you beggar. Get a job. But this brahmachari, he was very happy. He was happy being a beggar. Because whatever he got, he would offer it to Krishna. And what would he get? People generally, if they were charitable, they would give the worst thing in their house. The cheapest, worst thing in those days in Bengal was chipped up rice from the bottom of the bucket, when the rice is kind of broken up and everything like that. So they would give him the broken grains of rice, not the whole grains of rice. And he would put it in his little bag, and he'd go out, and the whole day he would be chanting the holy names of Krishna, never stopping chanting the names of constantly. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
Nobody even knew he was a good devotee. The people in general just thought he was a beggar, nothing more. He never advertised his inner qualities of devotion. He was just a beggar to the eyes of the world. But he was constantly thinking of Krishna, constantly chanting the names of Krishna. He would take that chipped up broken rice and he would cook it, and with great love and devotion he would offer it to Krishna. And how much he was dear and loved by all the devotees. In fact, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu first came back from Gaya after he took initiation and was manifesting his ecstasies of love of God, he wanted to meet all the devotees at Suklambar Brahmachari's little thatched hut. He could have met at any other big, beautiful home, but that was the place he wanted to reveal his true bhakti to the world. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would every evening have wonderful, wonderful kirtans at the house of Srivas Thakur. Actually, Lord Chaitanya was God himself, who descended into this world in the age of Kali, as predicted by the great Vedic scriptures, 4,500 years before his advent. But sometimes, in the intimate circles of his most confidential devotees, he would satisfy their desires by revealing his true glory of the Supreme Lord Krishna to them. So on one day, he sat on the throne of Vishnu, and all the devotees were chanting and dancing. On this day, Suklambar Brahmachari, he had ragged clothes. He was very poor. He had no family, nothing. He just had ragged clothes, and he was very thin, from very small quantities of food that he would get. But on this day, he was dancing and chanting, blissfully. He was smiling and dancing, and his little bag was on his shoulder going back and forth. And Lord Chaitanya saw him, and he was so pleased. Just his bliss, his happiness, was like sunlight that just illuminated everyone's hearts. How is it someone in such physical poverty was so blissful? From the core of his heart, he was just generating such happiness, dancing and dancing and dancing during the kirtan. Lord Chaitanya was just watching him dance and smiling. that he called Sukumbhara Brahmachari to come close to. He said, Sukumbhara, I desire to eat what is in your bag. Sukumbhara, what is this? How is this? Then Lord Chaitanya reached into his little cloth old bag and picked up a whole handful of his broken rice and put it in his mouth to eat it. Then another handful, another handful. Sukumbhara Brahmachari was thinking, and he was speaking, my lord, this rice is not fit for you. You are sitting on the throne of Vishnu. You are my supreme worshipable object. You are meant to eat the most wonderfully prepared foods by the goddesses of fortune and the greatest devotees. This is not even fit hardly for a beggar. Do not eat it. But Lord Chaitanya kept eating handful after handful. Great happiness. It said, I am eating this rice for my purification. This rice is like nectar because it is from the bag of Sukumbhara Brahmachari. He said, Sukumbhara, people do not know what a great devotee you are, but you are always in great spirit of compassion, chanting my holy names, remembering me, worshipping me, with whatever little you have. And I am seated in your heart. I know all these things. Therefore, it is the great pleasure of my heart to accept your offerings. Now, generally, when people offer something to the Lord, there's all sorts of standards that are supposed to be met. We know in the kitchen we have to take our bath, and we have to use the right types of pots and the right types of spices and the right types of bhoga. And then we come up and we offer the food. We ring the bell. We offer incense. There's mantras and there's mudras and there's other various regulative principles by which we make our offerings. Sukumbhara Brahmachari did not do any of these things. He didn't even cook it. But Lord Chaitanya was happy to eat it because of his humility, because of his genuine devotion and simplicity. Lord Chaitanya wanted that rice. On the other hand, there was Maharaj Pratapamudra. He was a great king, the king of the entire state of Orissa. And it is described that Maharaj Pratapamudra, he wanted so much to have the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in his life. When he was told, because he was a king associated with so many materialistic people, that Lord Chaitanya would not meet him, immediately, without second thought, he said, then I will give up this kingdom. I don't want the kingdom. I'll be a beggar. If that's what it takes to get the mercy of the Lord, real wealth is the mercy of Krishna. Real wealth is not the things of this world. The things of this world bring no real happiness. The rich people of the world, are they happy? They may look happy, they may disguise themselves as happy, but in their hearts, they're in fear, they're in anxiety. They're attached. Real happiness is the inner peace of Krishna consciousness. And that's what King Pratapamudra wanted. But the devotees, they convinced him, stay in your kingdom. And ultimately the Lord accepted him. It's a wonderful story. But it is described that when Lord Chaitanya decided to go to Vrindavan, during his first attempt, King Pratapamudra was told, he said, the entire treasury of my kingdom is for him and his devotees to serve him. He just used everything for the pleasure of the Lord. He arranged big storehouses with grains and cooks, because there happened to be hundreds and thousands of devotees and common people following Lord Chaitanya to Vrindavan. So he arranged three times a day, wherever the Lord and his devotees were traveling, he would have a big feast for them, waiting for them, and nice accommodations. And wherever there was a river, he would have royal boats waiting for Lord Chaitanya to take him across. He utilized everything he had for the service of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was pleased. So what was the difference between Suklambar Brahmachari and Maharaj Pratapa-Rudra? By material standards, it was a big, big difference. But in the heart of the Lord, there was no difference at all. Suklambar Brahmachari, all he had was broken rice. He used that for the Lord's pleasure. King Pratapa-Rudra, he had the entire wealth of the kingdom. He used that for the Lord's pleasure. They both achieved the same perfection because they both had that humble spirit that I am not the doer, I am not the controller, I am the servant, servant of the servant of the servant. If we become entrapped by the illusory misconception that I am the doer, that the facilities that I have mind, then we become entangled. However, if we maintain the simple, humble spirit, I am servant. Whatever I have, whatever I don't have, is not what's important. What's important is that spirit of devotion, that spirit of sacrifice for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of God. And it is that spirit that brings about real happiness. There is no other real happiness in all the 14 worlds. Thakur Bhakti Vinod explained in one beautiful song, I have searched and considered everything in all the 14 planetary systems of the universe, and I have come to the conclusion that Krishna, you are the only one who can save. The only real happiness is in serving, glorifying, becoming your devotee. So in this beautiful verse it is explained that the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. And who is the controller of the modes of the material nature? Krishna. Any question? Very auspicious. It's an auspicious omen when someone comes in the door with a question.
Always. Hearing in the kitchen your very nice statement that the key of success is humility. And I have actually a doubt, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in order to be happy, we can offer everything in sacrifice for his pleasure. And though everything auspicious will be given to the one who is doing the sacrifice, and he is also saying that he is the creator of the Varnashram Dharma. In this way the people can be happy in every stage. But Prabhupada was saying that we could develop this cooperation in order we can show him this love, in order we can develop this Varnashram Dharma, in order to protect our society. So personally, I find it difficult to see this key of unity and cooperation to develop in Europe. And my question is, how shall we start in order that we have the hope that the leaders really us to start somewhere to develop cooperation in the Varnashram atmosphere in order to protect the line of our spiritual masters.
This is a very big question. And it is 9:10. So I beg forgiveness, I cannot speak sufficiently due to my own lack of realization and lack of time as well, but I will speak something with your permission. That we have to understand the concept of Varnashram Dharma from the point of view of the basis of the very purpose of human life. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that very nicely. Nahamvi Brunachan Aravatiranapi Vaishana Shudra. And he ends this verse, Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayam Dasa 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 Dasa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not speaking only of himself, he's speaking of every living being. That I am not a Brahmin, I am not a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, or a Shudra. I am not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyasi. What is my real identity? And what is my real aspiration in life? To be the insignificant, humble servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. Anu das. Das, das, das. Anu. Anu means atomic particle. So this is the basis of our true existence. And it is the understanding of this that should be the real aspiration of all of us, to be a Vaishnava. Vaishnava means servant of the servant of the servant of the devotees. And this is where we have to start, with this aspiration, with this ideal. And according to our gunas and karmas, we accept an ashram that we are happiest and strongest in performing this work of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And according to our gunas and karmas, we accept a particular occupational duty, either as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, for the purpose of engaging in the spirit of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord and his devotees. Is this not what our philosophy is? So it may be somewhat unclear at this particular time exactly the structure of Varna Ashram within our society, but the essence is there, and we must strive for that essence at all times. And even if we're not striving for this essence, even if we're perfectly situated in our varna and ashram, it's all maya, it's all material. Varna ashram, Prabhupada explains there's asuric varna ashram and there's daivi varna ashram. Daivi varna ashram is when everything is being offered to Krishna, whether you're a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, or Sannyas. And asuric varna ashram is if you're doing anything for another purpose. So therefore, this basic principle has to be very, very, very strongly established and shared amongst us in a cooperative spirit. And yes, as a service to the devotees, we should definitely, we must, it's Prabhupada's desire, strive to place each devotee in the most natural condition where that person can make spiritual advancement. So that he or she is happy. Essentially, Varnashram Dharma is just so that people are happy. If they're happy, they'll continue their devotional service. Everyone's looking for happiness. If a devotee is happy, that devotee can do anything practically. That devotee will be willing to do anything practically. And that devotee will never leave Krishna consciousness. If a devotee is unhappy, it's hard to sustain a high level of devotion year after year after year. We start looking for other alternatives outside of real Krishna consciousness to find relief or happiness. We have seen this again and again. We're still seeing it. So the leaders of our society, and leaders means on every level leaders, in my humble opinion, the real progress will not be made on an international level. It will be made on local levels. That's my humble opinion. Because internationally, there can be direction. But if local devotees really, really commit themselves to take care of their devotees and influence the devotees to really understand the essence of their life is to be the servant of the servant of the servant. If we preach this, if we propagate this, if we exemplify this, people will follow it. We have seen in our movement anything that is emphasized, there's miraculous empowerment. You make the priority to build temple, there's magnificent temples within our movement that came from nothing, with no money, nothing. It's just, it's the priority. Krishna makes it happen. In South Africa, one godbrother, Tulsi Das, he had nothing, he had no one. He started, and now there's magnificent temple. In New Vrindavan, where this beautiful Vyasa San, the original Vyasa San of this, it's in Srila Prabhupada's palace. It started, nobody even knew how to put two bricks together. The master plan for that was written on a brown paper bag with a pencil. And now millions of people have come to see it and say, oh, this is the most beautiful building we've ever seen. To see Prabhupada. Where there's a priority, there's empowerment. Devotees used to go out and try to distribute back to Godheads, which were not even printed. They would just run off on a little mimeograph machine. A few pages, black and white, no pictures. They'd go out in the streets in the winter, they'd come back, they'd distribute sometimes three or four magazines, and people, oh, this is very good. When somebody did 10, everyone was thinking, this person is empowered. That was priority for book distribution. Now there's tens and millions of books being distributed. Where we put our priorities, Krishna will empower us. If we put our priorities in serving the devotees, caring for the devotees, making the devotees happy, then Krishna will give us the intelligence and the means to do that. And then why will devotees leave? Devotees don't go to other spiritual societies because there's something higher. There's nothing higher than what Prabhupada has given. But they may go if they don't feel cared for, if they're dissatisfied, if they're unhappy, and it's usually due to the social environment. People don't have to go to all these counseling systems and these New Age conceptions. They go because they don't feel cared for. They'll go where somebody says, I like you very much. Oh, very good, very good. This is very high. But look at the relationships between Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. Look at how Prabhupada cared for people personally around him. Our whole Vaishnava society is based on loving relationships. If we emphasize that, if we educate people how to do that, train people how to do that, then devotees will want to do that. Devotees are not impersonalists, they're personalists. They're bhaktas. They're looking for the personal realization of love of Krishna. we can't find that unless we develop relationships with Krishna's devotees on a personal level. And that is the real meaning of service, personal service. So when we start emphasizing this and creating systems and plans by which to facilitate devotees serving and helping one another, and make our goal in life that every devotee is happy following the pure principles of Krishna consciousness, so no need to compromise. People may follow at whatever level they're on, but if they're encouraged and feel they're going to want to come higher and higher and higher, that is the ultimate preaching. What is the best preaching? A happy devotee. And what's even better than that? A temple full of happy devotees. I've talked to people who have said to me that I have been a guest for the last 10 years. Do you ever think of becoming initiator? Do you ever think of joining the temple? They said, yes, I have thought about it. But as long as I'm a guest, people treat me so nice. But if I join the temple, then they'll start treating me the way I see them treat each other. I don't want to be that. That's not the proper preaching Prabhupada wanted us to give. If you read Prabhupada's books, many times he says, the reason he established these temples is not just so that people will see the deities. Because people see the deities, they don't know what the deity is. And if you tell them the deity's God, they don't know how to approach the deity and God. The deity's the center. But why did Prabhupada actually build these temples? He explains, to give people the opportunity to associate with devotees. So the heart of the temple is the association of devotees. If there's cooperative, loving, trusting relationships amongst devotees, and that just comes through emphasis and education, and trying to sensitively place people in where they're naturally happiest serving Krishna. Surrender is there. But unless a person is rightly situated, it's very difficult to continue to surrender. So this is very, very important. You go out and distribute so many books, but people will have faith in the books when they meet devotees who are happy following what's in the books. Would you agree with that? Very well. Thank you for coming in the door. So, in my opinion, the answer to your question, where do we begin, from my own small realization, is we have to really start emphasizing service to Vaishnavas, caring for Vaishnavas, teaching Vaishnavas, and giving devotees the facility to actually develop Vaishnava relationships. And these relationships should be based on very strong and pure sadhana and very pure moral lives, hearing the glories of the Lord. It's wonderful. When devotees like each other, nicest kirtans take place. Nicest classes take place when everyone is a family coming together to hear about Krishna, to chant the glories of Krishna. There's an intimacy. Intimacy of relationship of everyone in the room. And that should be there. But it should be done on pure Vaishnava principles, not just sentimental material principles. We should care about people physically, we should care about people mentally, emotionally, we should care about people spiritually, we should integrate the three, and we should actually inspire people to really, really want to remain in Krishna consciousness. One of the great problems we have is we're so busy thinking of what this person should do now to best serve the temple. We don't think, what does this person need? What is the best way to engage this person so that they will remain happy in Krishna consciousness for the rest of their lives? A father with a child. The father thinks about the child's immediate needs, but the father also thinks about the child's 30, 40, 50 years down the line. You send the child to school. The child, he doesn't get that much benefit today by going to school. He doesn't do that much good for the family by going to school today. You send the child to school because you know 20 years later it's good for him. Until then it may not be that good for him, but 20 years later it's good for him, and now it's also good. Isn't that the way a father thinks? We should start being fatherly and motherly to devotees and think about their futures. Not just what they're doing now, but how they're being engaged now, how they're performing their sadhana now, how they're being trained and educated now in Krishna consciousness. It should be so that 20, 30, 40 years down the line, they will be very strong and they will have great benefits. And they can do tremendous things for the whole world. We can do the things today, but I think we should start thinking that that is secondary. Long-range vision should be priority, and the immediate managerial consideration should be secondary. That may not be that easy, but I think it will be very important if we can do it. So we could start with, you don't have to wait for the international GPC to come up with a solution. Right here in this little temple, start helping the devotees, start making wonderful, wonderful arrangements that they're happy in Krishna consciousness, that they're well cared for in Krishna consciousness, that they have personal relationships. All we have to do is just educate them in the principles that Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada has taught us and practice those. And it will be the happiest society in the world. We don't have to introduce anything new. We just have to revive the ancient system that we've neglected. And this is a problem. We neglect what's right here in Prabhupada's teachings, right here in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own example. We neglect it year after year after year, and then we think we have to go somewhere else to get. We have to go somewhere else to make people happy. We have to go somewhere else to learn how to care about people. Look at Vasudev Dutt. He was willing to go to hell for the rest of eternity so that everyone else could enjoy the pleasure of going back to Godhead. What kind of a caring person is that? And we have to go to some counseling system or some psychiatrist? I don't know. We should just see what we have and what we've neglected. Revive what we've neglected rather than trying to impart material substitutes. And that comes by emphasis, by making it a priority. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he emphasized three things primarily. The chanting of the holy names. Without that, it's not a spiritual society. That's the essence of it. That's the Yuga Dharma. That's what's going to bring us back to the spiritual world. But for us to chant in the proper state of mind for the rest of our lives, we have to serve Vaishnavas. We have to be the servant of the servant of a Vaishnava. And what does it mean to serve a Vaishnava? It doesn't mean, Prabhu, get out of my way. Why? Just calling someone Prabhu is not service. Treating him as Prabhu, or her, that is Vaishnava Seva. Devotee's sick, give them good health. Devotees in anxiety, take the time to be kind to them. Devotees in need, give them what they need. Give them good example. Give them a spiritual atmosphere where they want to hear and chant for the rest of their lives. That is service. That is the most essential service. We have a little temple in Bombay, Radha Gopinath Temple. It's an insignificant temple. And we just tried this. We're not very good at it. We have a long, long way to go to do it properly. But we just tried it. Let's just make the emphasis to just create an environment where the whole emphasis is to care for the devotees and make them happy. And try to train them according to their varna and ashram to our capacity the best we can. As Vaishnavas. We just tried it. And things started growing. And we were never a good book distribution center. But just because the devotees were so happy together in Krishna consciousness, and we say, work together to distribute books. Yes, yes, let's go, let's go. 2 years ago, during the month of December, they distributed 62,000 hardback Bhagavad Gita. I think last year, number either three or fifth in the whole world, were just a medium temple, but I think it was for the whole year. Last year, I think we were either three or five for book distribution. Not for medium, but for all temples. Something like that. We're not bragging. We're not good book distributors. We didn't even put the emphasis on that. We put the emphasis on loving, caring relationships based on pure hearing and chanting and Prabhupada's teachings. What's in the books? And then we said, now let's go out and distribute books. Haribol. We don't know how we do. So in my humble opinion, if we make it the emphasis to make devotees happy, they will be happy. We have everything. We have prasad. We have kirtan. We have the whole culture of Vaishnavism. Prabhupada said, you will know who my devotee is because he is a perfect gentleman or a perfect lady. If we live like this, devotees will be inspired. When devotees are inspired, they'll do anything for Krishna.
Thank you for descending from the kitchen. I think it's late.
I think the night of Brahma has ended.
Very well. So with Krishna's grace, I will be honored to see all of you again tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai. His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj ki
jai.